Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished and senior professional from Belgium, Ingrid Covington. Ingrid, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in.
Thank you. Ingrid is a chartered psychologist. I'm not sure how, whether it's C-Psychol, HCPC. She's the founder of Staying Well Together. She's the co-founder of the Center for Psychology at Work, and she's an executive coach. So Ingrid, before we start talking about all the work that you're doing, tell me a little bit about your own journey.
Yeah, thank you. It's always interesting reflecting on our own journeys and what it is we see as being defining. In our journey, I'm actually from Yorkshire, the north of England, and I was born in a small village where I felt different because my mother was German and she was quite eccentric. So I spent much of my time trying to fit in, trying to blend in. You know, she did things like she wore wacky clothes, and I was just highly embarrassed. She used to buy me clothes that made me stand out, and the last thing I wanted to do was stand out. So I remember being this painfully shy child, just really trying to blend in. And it was studying sociology at school. Psychology wasn't available at that time on the curriculum, but studying sociology made me suddenly realize that there was a big world outside of my tiny village, and that it was okay to embrace who I was and to understand more about what existed in the world, what opportunities there were beyond my small village. So I think studying sociology and then going on to psychology was really defining for me. So I really identify as a social psychologist. So although professionally I'm what we call in the UK an occupational psychologist, in the US it's called an industrial organizational psychologist. In Europe it's called work organizational psychologist. So we come under many different names, but although I'm a work organizational psychologist, first and foremost, I'm about social psychology. So about the individual within the context, how do you bring out the best in the individual?
Oh, interesting. So let me then ask you my first question, which is, what is your role as a part of the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers in Europe, SHAPE, which is a part of NATO?
That's right. SHAPE is the military arm of NATO. And I know you have listeners tuning in from all around the world. So it may be helpful just to give a slight background. So it's the military arm of NATO. And NATO is the world's most successful alliance.
Correct.
And it really is. It's been in existence for six decades. And is an alliance built on common values and a commitment to protect the well-being of all member nations. So there are 30 member nations and based at SHAPE, the military arm, and there are about two dozen partner nations as well. So with the 30 nations, there are 27 languages. Spoken. So it's a really diverse and culturally rich environment. So it's a really stimulating environment to be in. And the reason why I'm here, I did embark upon a project. So I work as a consultant, and I was asked to come on board to work with the commanders at SHAPE at NATO. To help open up a crisis operations management center. And I was responsible for the culture and mindset because the SHAPE is a strategic headquarters and the military are often very comfortable operating at a more operational and tactical level. So I was there to help them develop a mindset, which was to think, plan, and act strategically. And I ended up meeting who is now my husband there. And so I moved here to Belgium 3 years ago, just before COVID, 6 months before COVID. So that's The reason I came here, but then my role shape changed as a result of COVID.
Very interesting. You're also called the community whisperer after founding a community-wide well-being program at SHAPE. Tell me a little bit about it, and what was the background of the term you got, or the why you were called community whisperer.
Yes, so I mentioned before that I'm a social psychologist, and I really believe we're shaped hugely by our environment. Research suggests about 70% of all our behaviour is shaped by our culture and environment. And I mentioned I arrived with my two daughters at SHAPE, a member of this international community, 6 months before COVID. When COVID hit, I was immediately concerned about the community. I understood people were going to feel isolated. I understood there was going to be a risk of isolation, mental health challenges, anxiety and depression. So I decided to leverage my skills as a social psychologist and develop a program that united and strengthened the international community. And that's why I was called the Community Whisperer, because I introduced a program called Staying Well Together. And that's the idea. How do we stay well and do it together? Because there's a huge power in collective wisdom and collective support. So it continues to give. If you just focus on individuals and look at what resources you have, so you might have, for example, in a community, 20 psychiatrists. Well, they're limited in the impact that they can have. So I'm all about how can we leverage the resources that we already have together. And that, for me, is social capital. So I'm all about saying, how can we strengthen our social capital? So that's how can we understand what values we share, what resources we can share, so that we all feel connected with a shared purpose, we feel supported, and we can give and take. And that's how most really effective community programs work. People feel a sense of belonging, and they're motivated and inspired to invest and draw upon the community when the need arises.
Very interesting. Also, do share with us, what are some of the well-being challenges being addressed among the community? And I appreciate that, you know, since a lot of this is defense, you may not be able to talk too much, but whatever you can, I'd be grateful.
Yes, I think what I can say is that not just in the military, but in many cultures, in many communities, there's still a stigma around mental health. And when there's a stigma around mental health, there is often a need to encourage what we call support-seeking behaviours rather than maladaptive behaviours. So people can often find coping strategies that might become unhelpful. So I think one of the biggest challenges in a military community is definitely the stigma. How do you make people feel safe, psychologically safe, to seek help?
Correct.
And that psychological safety shows itself in different ways based on who you are. So at SHAPE, only 16% of the military are female. So the majority of the military are male. And research shows us that men access social and emotional support in different ways.
Correct.
So you've got to really be creative in finding ways to make it okay for men to talk and to realize it's not seen as a weakness if they need to share concerns that they're having. Equally so with the military spouses. You've got many military spouses who have to give up their career, and they often lose their identity. It becomes absorbed by the military culture. They have to move. So the military have a process where they have to change jobs every 2 to 3 years. Mm. So your entire family gets uprooted and has to move. This means the women often cannot hold down a career. Mm. So research again shows that military spouses have a higher than average risk of anxiety and depression. So these are some of the issues already experienced within the military communities, and they're compounded by a pandemic that left people feeling homesick, you know, really, really homesick, away from the support structures and people they felt safe around. So they were, that gives you a general feel, I think, of some of the kind of well-being challenges that I was trying to support during the program.
But, you know, it's very interesting. You say this, and it's so, so important. And as you were talking, I was thinking of myself, because my father was a retired brigadier general and in the Indian Army, and we were moving every 2-3 years. But maybe this whole discussion about mental health is now much more acceptable than it what probably was used to be 5 decades ago. What are your thoughts?
Yes, well, that's interesting that you had that experience yourself, so you can identify with the impact that movement has. It has advantages and disadvantages. I'd say absolutely we have made progress, and it's really important to recognize that progress. We've made huge progress, and the support that's in place now compared to 50 years ago, it is incredible. However, there's much, much more progress that needs to be made. There's still, my passion is to eradicate human suffering. And there's still too much human suffering still, because people are feeling alone. And that was my campaign. My campaign was called You're Not Alone. And in fact, if you go onto the military compound now, it's still there. 2.5 years later, the NATO community has still held on to my message, because they see how important it is to communicate every day. So when you drive, it's a secure compound. When you drive onto the base, there's a huge banner with a big campaign saying You're Not Alone. Wow. And it outlines, my program was based on an evidence-based approach to well-being, which is called the 5 ways to well-being. So there are 5 different ways that you can ensure your own well-being, and they are making sure you stay connected, making sure you keep active, keep learning, give to others, and take notice. And the take notice is about mindfulness, really being aware of your immediate feelings and environment. And so this is still on a banner. It's on LED screens all around the compound. I was just in the car yesterday leaving, and it flashed up on the compound, on the LED screen. And it impacts me profoundly every time I see it, because everybody is receiving that message. You're not alone. We know you're here, and we care about you. So so every day we need those messages, and we need to follow that through with ways that people can find that social support.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. That's what a great response. So Ingrid, I'm now going to move to the second segment of our conversation, which is about you as a coach. Given all your expertise in the area of psychology, working with the military, working in Europe, my first question to you is, how has your background supported your own coaching philosophy, your style, and your values?
It's a great question, and I love questions that make you reflect, because so often we're just doing. And it's so important to have time to zoom out. Correct. You know, we're often zoomed in. And I like the opportunity to zoom out, because then we can really start to see patterns in our own life. And I think I'm very much shaped by my education and some of the psychologists that really shaped how I see the world. One of whom I've had the pleasure of meeting in person, and that's Edgar Schein. And he's responsible for identifying and defining the concept of organizational culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says that we, well, his phrase is culture eats us for breakfast, lunch, yeah. and dinner. Not just for breakfast, because many people say culture eats you for breakfast. He says, no, for lunch mm. and dinner. And one of the most powerful thoughts that he has that I use in my coaching is that people are often not conscious of mm. this mm. way that their thoughts and feelings and values are being shaped.
Yeah.
So he said, the more conscious we can be of the way it's shaping us, the more we can be connected to mm. our authentic self. So mm. for me, in my coaching relationships, I really try to focus on this shared awareness that mm. can be really empowering in the relationship. And I think it's really important to approach understanding what's your purpose, what are you trying to do as a coach. And I see myself as a skilled helper,
mm-hmm.
you know, in whether I'm consulting, whether I'm coaching, everything I'm doing, I'm trying to be a helper, a skilled helper for the individual.
Mm.
So I have some fundamentals, some frameworks that I think are fundamental in kind of shaping how I might help someone. So mm. One of those fundamentals is, I don't know if you're familiar with FIRO-B. Mm. Many people are familiar with Myers-Briggs, mm. but FIRO-B, when I was trained in FIRO-B, mm. had a really profound impact on me. Mm. And it stands for the Fundamentals of Interpersonal Relationships okay. Orientation. Mm. And it's just three things that define our fundamental needs in interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the need for control, and it's twofold. It's mm. not only just the need for control, but the need to control others, mm. the need to be open and the need for others to be open to us.
Mm.
And my mind's just gone blank on the third one, mm. inclusion, the need to be included and the need to include others, and they can be different.
Mm.
So I have this fundamental framework. So whenever I'm trying to, first of all, make sure I'm helping, and therefore that means I'm not the expert with the power mm. telling anyone the answers. I'm really just creating psychological safety and a condition mm. for the individual in which they can thrive. But then I also have in my mind these fundamentals. So I'm always saying, how is control playing mm. in that dynamic? How is inclusion playing in that dynamic? And how is openness? Mm. And that I find really helpful, just to have fundamentals, because I think we can be overwhelmed. Okay. If you, there are millions and trillions of books out there on mm. leadership and coaching, and you can be overwhelmed. So for me, it's about, what are those fundamentals, like a North Star that's going to guide you through choppy waters.
Mm, well said. My next question is about the people who you have been shaped by, and you know, we've all been shaped by different people in our lives, and that really impacts how we function as coaches. So I'd like to ask you, how have you been shaped by people, and how have those influences shaped you as a coach?
I think this is such an important question, because I truly believe no man is an island. No man or woman is an island.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a really interesting thought about our success, what we achieve, how much we attribute that to ourselves.
Correct.
You know, and I'm very much a supporter of the idea of being lucky, rather than being skilled and successful. Mm. I was lucky. And why was I lucky? Because throughout my entire life, right from infant school, I've had people who believed in me. I've had people who invested in me, right from teachers all the way through to mentors. From my first employment, I started my career actually as a bank manager.
Mm-hmm.
Right from the start, I've had people who showed me they believed in me, who stretched me, who challenged me. And that has shaped who I am. So I invest a lot of time. I have mentees all around the world. Mm-hmm. I have mentees from India, from Ghana, mm-hmm. from Pakistan, from all over the world, because mm-hmm. I believe it's so important that people feel that somebody's got their back, that mm-hmm. somebody believes in them. And mm-hmm. you will not hear anybody's story who's been successful that didn't have a whole village of people supporting them. And that's what we need to do. We need to make sure, like I said before, that we don't just take, that we give back as well.
Mm-hmm. Well said. So Ingrid, I have time for two more questions. My next question is that what, in your opinion, are the areas younger leaders like millennials and Gen Z leaders need to be coached in, because they're now getting into positions of authority and they bring in a breath of fresh air into every organization?
They absolutely are. It's wonderful again to see that collective power, because they've had shared experiences, given what as a generation they've experienced, and they're much more in touch with purpose and meaning, and that moving us away from profit. Without profound impact on humanity. And that for me is hugely inspiring. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I could communicate out there now to the Gen Z and millennial leaders, mm-hmm. I'd definitely say, for me, I would love to see more HR directors on boards, not just finance, to get some balance. But in terms of individual personal growth, what I would suggest is key for these future leaders. There are a couple of areas. The first is the importance of solitude. Mm-hmm. There was a wonderful lecture, and if you have resources that people can seek or be signposted to after they listen to podcasts, I'd be very happy to share this speech. There's a wonderful speech that was given to West Point, to some of the future leaders of the American military and society, because they often go on. Mm. Eisenhower, the first commander here at SHAPE, he later became the US president. Wow. So they often do become leaders. And he said, as a leader, what you really need to do is learn to be comfortable in your own thoughts. Mm. I mentioned before, I think we're overwhelmed. Daniel Kahneman, I think, has brought out a new book called Noise. Mm-hmm. I think we've got too much noise around. So I think one of the most important skills is, how can you limit and cut out that noise and be comfortable in your own thought, not being influenced by social media trends or what that company is doing or what that other leader is doing, but have time away where you are quiet in your own thoughts. You have time to deeply reflect on what it is that you think and feel is important, what patterns you are starting to observe yourself. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is a skill that I would definitely focus on coaching within the millennial and Generation Z demographic. And then I think it's, how do you then form really trusting relationships? Because leaders can feel very lonely.
Yeah,
I've been doing research here in the military, and there's a lot of leaders who feel very, very lonely. So how can you then form really, really meaningful relationships with a select few people who you trust, who you can really then share some of these reflections with? And I think that's those dyadic relationships, that friendship with somebody where you can really both go deep in thoughts and feel safe enough to explore. I think that is two really important steps to strengthening you as a leader.
Fascinating. Ingrid, we've run out of time. So I just want to say thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for the last two points you gave me were so incredible, especially from the perspective of young leaders, understand the importance of solitude and try and understand how do we form trusting relationships. I think trust is such an important part of all our lives. And I've met so many people, including my own self, where we make mistakes in trusting and then feel let down. Thank you for speaking to me about your journey. Thank you for talking to me about your role in SHAPE and all the work that you're doing. Thank you also for talking to me about the five different ways of being that you have spoken about, or well-being that you have spoken about to me. Finally, thank you again for speaking to me about your perspectives on coaching. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and thank you to your viewers and listeners. And I'm happy to share any resources. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.